VentureCast.
There is nobody I know who is more deserving of sitting in that room with that company and making music than you, my friend. This is such great news. I cannot wait to hear that. And I will teach Tim who the MC5 are between this conversation and the next one so that he can do more than just smile politely. But that is such great news.
I three of those names I recognize. I think that's pretty good for me.
That was pretty good.
All right.
50 years of music with 50-year-old white guys.
Fellas, how are you here? We are on the 50 years of music with 50-year-old white guys podcast, exploring the Southwest with Brad Brooks, artist extraordinaire. Jeff Simons, do the honors.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Brad Brooks to the podcast. He is a longtime running buddy of mine in the San Francisco Bay Area. He wears a lot of different musical hats, but the one we're showcasing today is a series of remarkable solo albums stretching back to, for me, I think 2007 is the first time Brad and I played together or that I became aware of him, but he's been making just fantastic music for a long time. His most recent record is God Save the City, which is a, well, it's a lot of different things. It's but it's a great record that's probably unified around the idea of holding it together through crisis, through the trifecta pandemic facing America with racial unrest and COVID and Brad's own journey through that time to health and success. So if you have not listened yet to Brad Brooks's God Save the City, then you have not heard one of the best records put out in the last 5 or 6 years. So
it's
get
good.
On that,
it's good.
Listeners. And please welcome Brad to the program, our resident expert on cacti and tumbleweeds. So here we go.
No, thank you guys for having me. Really looking forward to talking about this, you know, my Tucson roots, which, as I said, are still, you know, I still have some strong roots there and go back. My mom lives there, but it's all still right. A very vibrant music scene, probably even more after, you know, I was there not too long ago, maybe around Thanksgiving. And I was just really kind of blown away how much is going on all over that sort of downtown Club Congress area. I was amazed. It's very much like Austin, Texas. You know, there's a lot.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, but it wasn't like that when you were a teenager, or did it have a pretty good music scene back then?
No, it did. It's always been kind of Austin's little stepbrother, you know, in a way.
Okay.
But very similar vibe of like, there's a country, country kind of thing, to it, but also like a very freaky, DIY, do it yourself, house party kind of thing to it. And there's always been very creative people and music coming out of there because it was an inexpensive place to live. And
sure,
there was the University of Arizona, which is still there, and it still has a cool vibe, you know.
That's awesome. Now, so you grew up there, did you learn to play guitar there? Were you DIY as well?
I started kind of the early 80s. I didn't play guitar or piano. I was just the lead singer, writing lyrics to other people's music.
Okay.
And then eventually kind of learned to do that more when I moved in the Bay Area. But I was, you know, I kind of started in the scene there in the early 80s and really cut my teeth on all that was going on there. And then I moved to the Bay Area in 1990, so I can't really speak too much past that other than just the touchstones that I have. I've been going back, the friends that I still have.
Well, if we want to go back to the early 80s, because most of our listeners are of that vintage, what were some of the clubs? Do you remember some of the venues that you would go and see shows at in Tucson?
Yeah, there was a place called Nino's, which was kind of the place that we probably played the most. There was Club Congress, which is still around, still has great shows. And there was a place later on in the late 80s called Mudbugs. It was like an all ages places. There was the Tucson Performance Center. There was kind of, it's weird, Tucson was kind of split between like east side of Tucson, which is more heavy metal and hard rock, and then you have the west side of Tucson, which was more the arty side, more of the just kind of coming up with its own stuff. You know, there were bands like Green on Red that came out of there. There was Hal Gelb, Giant Sand. That's kind of where he started. Al Perry, the Cattle. There was a guy named Reiner who was probably the best. He was more of a roots kind of style, but just his stuff is really amazing to still check out. He was a great guitar player.
Wait, what was the name? What was his name?
Reiner, R-A-I-N-E-R.
Okay.
Unfortunately, he died of cancer in the 90s, but he was really one of the best. And he had a mixture of being able to kind of do this sort of punky style mixed with like Dave Edmunds kind of ability.
Ooh. All right.
Know, kind of that good.
That's a mix right there. Yeah. Wow.
And then, Hal Gelb, Giant Sand. There was Van Christian with Naked Prey. Then later than that, there was the Sidewinders who came out probably one of the bigger bands. There was Gila Band. Oh, the Sidewinders became the Sand Rubies because they had to change their name at one point. But they had a really great record called Witch Doctor that came out in the 80s. Then there was Gila Band. There was a band called Gentlemen After Dark, which actually ended up moving to Phoenix later into LA, who were really big during that time. And but yeah, there were some great shows. And then later on, there was my band Pollo Elastico, who kind of was in the punk funk and kind of helped kind of be a part of that scene in Tucson. And
I'm sorry, and that was Pollo Elastico?
Pollo Elastico, the rubber chicken.
I mean, you've got the best band name ever right there. That's a great name.
Well, yeah, you strike gold in the first one and you're chasing it for the rest of your life.
Yeah, right.
Well, believe me, I was in about four other bands before that. That was the only one that like seemed to like, hit with people. So
that's really cool. Well, how old were you when you left?
God, I left when I was probably 28, 29. Something.
Oh, okay. Good long time in the Southwest. And how, so do you think at this point it's still informing your art, or where do you see it come up in your music and your lyrics?
Yeah, it does. Well, and my a really good example is in my last record, I wrote a song called Lee Marvin's Uzi, which is a totally weird song, but it's a true story. When I was living in Tucson, I was delivering bottled water that was my day job. I worked for Arrowhead Water. And the first time I went to, on my route, I went to Lee Marvin's house. And as I'm walking up to, it's like 7:30 in the morning. As I'm walking up to his house, I look to my left and there's an Uzi sitting on the wall.
Oh my
and I'd
God.
Never seen one in my life. And I looked at it and I was like, wow, that's different. And so I knocked on the door because that's the first time I was there. And he came out and I got to spend like 10 minutes just talking to him a little bit about movies. And we talked about music some because he'd sang. And finally, I'm like, yeah, what's the Uzi for?
What's the deal with the Uzi?
It was really right between us. It was just kind of like talking to me and he said, well, that's for the prime time rapists. And at the time there was this guy that was terrorizing Tucson called the prime time rapist. And he was like, and so I was like, man, I don't think he's coming here.
Yeah. Nah.
But so I kind of had to, I ended up writing a song that was about that experience. And I feel like it really seeped in my music when I started there's always a country kind of tinge to a lot of some of the bands back then. And I really rebelled against that when I was kind of there. I was more of a rocker dude. And more into like kind of, I guess, more synthesized kind of stuff as well at the time. But it was really always around. And it wasn't until I started writing my own songs that it started coming back in, you know. And it's weird. I had the same conversation with, I have a friend of mine, Eddie Spaghetti, who's in Super Suckers. And he came from the same scene. And so we were talking about it years and years ago about how this country thing had come back into our lives and how we'd always rebelled against it. And so for him, it came up because later on he ends up like doing a record and writing with Willie Nelson. But it was really this guy, Al Perry and the Cattle and Van Christian and Green on Red, Dan Stewart, those guys, that music kind of seeped into our sort of subconscious, and then it would come out in the writing later. And so I've always had this sort of country thing to my writing that just came out, and it's all from Tucson, really.
Well, it's funny you say that, because I'm listening to God Save the City these last few days and checking out your music. I found it hard to categorize at times. Like, there's something coming out at different times from different categories. And I do get the rocking thread, but there's still,
but
this,
there's a deep soulful thread in there, yeah, too. And there's like, I mean, you say rock, right? I mean, there's a classic rock vibe. That's like Beatles, Badfinger, Elvis Costello, like big melodies. Right. But then he's got this really kind of great kind of harder, funky thing that happens, but it's really evolved into kind of a classic soul thing. And that Leave Marvin Uzi track, like, you can feel the dust in the, I mean, like, I played that with Brad, and I have that in the background when I'm playing. Like, it's meant, it's music for big vistas, you know? So it doesn't surprise me to hear Brad talk about that.
Yeah, it's very, you know, it's very cinematic. You know, there's, and I will say that a band like Hal Gelbin, Giant Sand, and all his versions, and also Calexico, like, they distilled that vibe, you know, that Ennio Morricone kind of thing. And there's and that's still out there. There's a really great band called Sixa, XIXA, that has even taken it further. And they're doing this kind of psychedelic cumbia music.
Okay.
And it's really fucking cool, and it's heavy in parts, but it's very danceable. It's got like this southwestern vibe to it, and they are just badass. And Winston Watson, cool, who I've known on and off for years, has plays drums in that band, and it's really cool stuff. They're some of my favorite newer records out of there, and they just have an interesting take. It's two guys, Brian Lopez and Gabriel Sullivan, and they're both super talented singers, songwriters on their own, but they come together with this band, and it's
that sounds really cool.
Yeah, it's really they've kind of I think extended what Calexico kind of did, you know,
okay,
into a different thing. So
is it still, you mentioned going back down there to visit your mom and seeing the downtown area and all the music venues. Is it still a good place for artists? Still can get a cheap apartment in Tucson?
I think so. It's probably, you know, raised up. Maybe not like where Austin is now, where it's just kind of moved toward where the Bay Area is. But yeah, I think it's still expensive out there. And yeah, there's a vibrant music scene. People were able to make a living out there doing music. And like I said, there's my friend Lauren Dirks in Gila Bend, and he plays out a lot. And the Sidewinders, which was in Sand Rubies, those guys will do their thing out there every now and then. And I feel like that people are able to be able to make a living doing music out there, and that's great.
Awesome.
And I think that because it's always been a college town, and it's always been a place that kind of makes its own fun, you know, whether it's a house party or that still goes on. And in fact, I want to give a little shout out to a friend of mine. A friend of mine, Chris Carlone, is working on a documentary called Tale of Two Houses. And it's about the music scene, the house party DIY music scene in Tucson from 83 to 89. And basically there was two houses on one of the main streets by the university, and their bands would play there all the time. And so there's a lot of archival video footage, and he's put together a documentary about it called Tale of the House. So yeah,
that sounds great.
It's basically about what we're talking about, that time, you know, in the Southwest, kind of house party music scene.
Nice.
It's amazing when somebody decides to make a documentary about a thing that was so important to you, isn't it? Like, it's the greatest feeling. It like validates the space you keep in your brain for this like seminal experience in your life, you know?
Well, for sure. And Chris is very super talented cat. He played with me in Pollo Elastico, but has gone on to do like film editing and also he has this crazy thing called Borts Minorts, which is this character that he came up with. And but he does a lot of video stuff. He's done a couple of videos of mine. He did Night Fades and he did God Save the City. But yeah, he's been working on this project for about a year and sort of acquiring all the you know, all the footage and putting together in a story, but it's supposed to come out at some point. And then also another one, there's another friend of mine put together a documentary called High and Dry. His name is Michael Tabassi. And he talks more about, even more in depth about this whole time frame as well.
Cool. My buddy Joe went to U of A from, 88 through 93. And I remember visiting him and we saw some bands during that time. Yeah. Well, let me ask you this question. What is this is you bringing it home, since I told you we'd only grab 20 minutes of your time. What is your favorite musical memory you associate with Tucson or with the Southwest, you know, and whether that's as an artist or as a young fan of music, or it could be a childhood memory with your family. What kind of sticks with you musically in your heart?
Yeah. You know, I can't put one together, but just, there was a time, you know, maybe around that time when you came out, 88, that's kind of for me, like I was cutting my teeth in these different bands and with relative degrees of success. But really when I was in Pollo Elastico, there was a vibe there. People were getting back into like funk and soul and that kind of thing. But also were into heavy rock. And so when I was in that band, there was a lot of, that was probably a really great time of me sort of becoming the singer that I would become, and also kind of distilling a lot of things that, that I had kind of grown with, you know?
Right.
So there was this definite kind of scene during that time, you know, of people going out like really like, you know, we would play warehouse parties for like 300 people. And it was just wild, you know. In fact, some of it's online. There's a show, Pollo Elastico, at a warehouse. And it is just insane. Like there's just stage diving going on the whole time. And I'm like, you know, dodging people, and at some point we have to stop the show because there's a bunch of jocks who are being assholes and we had to call them out. But yeah, that probably show in that time was really fun. And there was a lot of buzz about the band at the time. And of course, like most things, it, you know, it didn't quite happen, but that's a really good memory I have of that warehouse show just being like so much fun. And a friend of mine, a couple of friends of mine, a guy named Craig Schumacher, it was the first band that he'd recorded, because we did it in a guy named Randy McReynolds. It was his studio. I think it was called 8x8 or something like that. And Craig was engineering, his first time recording a live band. And so he recorded the whole show. And then he goes on to make all those Calexico records and do all kinds of production stuff. So that's
really cool. Well, I also love you bringing that music to those 300 or so fans and coming back for more, you know, because probably they hadn't heard it, you know, they hadn't gotten into the history of music like you had at that moment. And there you are opening it up to them, except for the jocks. Apparently you didn't reach them.
Well, I mean, there was nothing, you know, it was kind of,
you never reach the jocks. Yeah. You never do.
Yeah. I mean, that was what it was kind of going on, you know, it was like it was when people were kind of into Fishbone and Red Hot Chili Peppers, but we had our Arizona version of it. There was definitely something unique about the band because we had grown up desert rats, you know. Just the guitar sound. Tucson is a guitar town, you know.
And
like Austin is, you know, it's got a twang, but it's also got like a psychedelic twang to it, you know. So,
all right. Well, I have got to go teach the youth of America how to Charleston and how to waltz.
You have such a weird job, dude. You have such a weird job. I don't even know what to say to that last sentence.
That's amazing. You know, I have one more sort of a plug to add. I am right now in the middle of getting mixes for this MC5 record. So
talk about that, my friend.
This is a record that I've made with Wayne Kramer and with Bob Ezrin producing, and we are hoping that it comes out probably in the early part of the summer. It's going to be on Ear Music, but I'm starting to hear mixes for this. Bob Ezrin is fucking genius, of course, but it's got some heavy players. It's got Abe Laboriel on drums, who's Paul McCartney's drummer. Don Wells playing bass.
Wow.
There's a song with Dennis Thompson, who's the original drummer in the MC5. Vernon Reed is playing a solo on this. So,
it's this crazy
thing, and maybe some point when it comes out, we can talk more about that.
I would love it.
There is nobody I know who is more deserving of sitting in that room with that company and making music than you, my friend. This is such great news. I cannot wait to hear that. And I will teach Tim who the MC5 are between this conversation and the next one so that he can do more than just smile politely. But that is such great news.
I three of those names I recognize. I think that's pretty good for me.
That was pretty good.
All right. I'll see you guys later.
Thank you guys.
Brad, thanks so much.
Nice meeting you online.
Later, friends. Talk to you soon.
See you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Welcome to Tuning Into Sound Wellbeing, where we harmonise your mind, body and soul. I'm Amanda, your sound therapy expert.
And I'm Stephen, the curious explorer uncovering the mysteries of sound.
Together we explore vibrations, frequencies and the power of sound therapy and tuning forks.
Discover ancient wisdom, reduce stress and tune into a healthier life. Subscribe to Tuning Into Sound Wellbeing today.
Welcome to the Candle Power Hour. Come with us backstage, behind the scenes of show business spanning over four decades and bringing you the experiences that can only be told by the people who were there.
Our guests are from the A-list, the F-list, and everyone in between. Get set for some of the most insane, hilarious, and inspiring stories you will ever hear.
I'm Mercury.
And I'm Diego.
Your host for the Candle Power Hour. Gas.